Well, hello there.
Well, hello there.
And welcome to episode
23, The Spies.
Yep. Today we're talking about The Mandalorian. If you know where you're here, we're here for The Mandalorian review.
In case you didn't know.
Eldon Adkin, and this is...
Evan Halbert.
So, today we're talking about The Spies, which was the newest episode, unless you're watching this at a later date than it wasn't. Episode 23.
Which is the second last episode.
Of season 3.
We're getting the finale tomorrow.
I know.
Which is massive, and so much happened in this episode.
Yeah, so let's just jump right into it if you want to.
Let's go. So, we start off back on Coruscant, which seems to be in this back alley, this downtown core.
Yep.
What, realistically, it's all downtown core, but anyways. Yep. Where we meet, what's her name? The not so great bad news.
Hater.
Terrible. The Rachel.
I wrote, yes, the Rachel. God, it's the Rachel!
It's the Rachel!
I wrote, terrible spy lady. I hate her.
Yes, I, terrible spy lady. I hate her.
Yep.
And she is absolutely the worst. And she's meeting with, I don't know what we call this droid.
So they're called, they're like hunter seekers. I think they're called like.
Yes, that makes sense.
They're Imperial, like spy droids.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called. 100%, but something like that.
So she gives this code, and who do we see? But finally, Moff Gideon.
Which, we knew he was around, we knew he was alive, we were waiting for it.
And then he finally makes his appearance.
Yeah, and he's just like, what do you have to report? She's like, BT dubs, the pirates of Navarro are all dead. And he's like, what happened?
How did that happen?
Yeah, and she's like, well, the Mandalorians. He's like, okay, whatever, Mandalorians are nothing to deal with. And she's like, yeah. Din Djarin's covert and Bo-Katan Kryze's loyalists have joined up. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense.
They're supposed to hate each other.
They hate each other. And she's like, nope, the report says they are best buds.
Let me tell you about my best friend.
And Gideon goes, uh-oh. And that's basically it. He hangs up. He's like, call me back when you have more news.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Then we see him walking down a hallway, which looks a lot like...
It's ray shielding is what it's called.
It is ray shielding, yeah. Which is episode one. We saw that in the Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Maul fight.
Yeah, inside the Naboo star or star the Naboo hangar.
Yes.
Now, really cool. You see these weird looking, almost Mandalorians, but they look more like stormtroopers.
Yes.
So they're called Imperial Super Commandos. Super Commandos, supposedly George Lucas, when he did episode 5. When you first meet Boba Fett, or I guess it's episode four, you first meet Boba, but whenever Boba was supposed to be there, it was actually supposed to be an amphitheater full of super commandos, but they couldn't afford super commandos. They couldn't afford to hire all those people, so instead, they had one Boba Fett that they then colored his armor to make him look less like the super commandos to use later on, and that is why we have Boba Fett.
And now we have super commandos.
And now we do, and they look really cool. They don't move. They're just standing there.
Well, there's some weird hybrid.
Yeah.
With the Mandalorians and the Stormtroopers.
Stormtroopers, yeah. And as Gideon walks towards the meeting room, we see some cloning vats.
Yes, actually, I didn't even catch that. Yep. Yeah. There's some cloning vats hanging out in there.
We see cloning vats, and then he goes into his meeting.
With the Shadow Council.
Yeah, which is really cool, too. So the Imperials never really died off. Shocker, I know. Who would have guessed? They're still around. And you see quite a few big names. Admiral Hux, who is the father of the same named character Hux in episode 7 and 8.
Which, if you didn't get it, I totally understand.
It went over my head.
I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I was just like, Hux, that's a name we recognize, but why does he have a beard?
It's his dad.
Mm.
But the funny thing is, actually, the actors are their brothers.
Wow.
Which is really cool. So then we also get to meet, Captain Pelion, who's a supporter of Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Ooh.
Which, if you don't know who Thrawn is, we talked about Thrawn before. Watch Media Madness, we talked about Thrawn as well, last week's episode. So Thrawn, Grand Admiral Thrawn, probably one of the best characters in Star Wars, in my opinion.
Definitely your favorite. But there's not much known about him. Unless you really dive deep, you don't really know a lot about him. So why don't you...
Yeah, if you read the books, Thrawn, it comes from a different galaxy than the Star Wars galaxy. He comes from... So where the Outer Rim is, he comes from past the Outer Rim. He goes to the outer, he goes through the Outer Rim to this to the Republic during the Clone Wars to be like, what's going on? He helps the Clone Wars kind of beat some separatists, goes home, comes back during, I guess at the end, tail end of episode 3 going into episode 4, before the Death Star is even built, and he kind of sneaks his way into the Empire, meets the Emperor, says, I'll work for you, but I work for the Chiss Ascendancy. His species is called the Chiss. They're this huge, hyper-intelligent race that lives in their own quarter. They deal with all kinds of issues there. There's other aliens everywhere you go. He comes here, takes over a fleet, very quickly graduates from the Academy. The books are fantastic. Check them out. Thrawn Ascendancy. Probably one of the best-written books I've read for Star Wars. If you listen to the audiobook, also fantastic. It's written by Timothy Zahn. I think that's how you pronounce his last name.
Zahn?
Something like that.
Amazing.
Amazing. But really big character. He's going to play a huge role in Ahsoka, so this is kind of our teaser into it.
Yes.
And the whole thing is, Gideon's a power play. Gideon's going for a power play. We know that he's killed the Doctor. Pershing is confirmed dead.
Well, throughout this council, that's kind of the big conversation. Yeah. And Gideon's power play is, well, where is this General Thrawn that you keep talking about? And why isn't he in attendance to these meetings? Yep. So there's a brief exchange, a brief back and forth about what's going on. Gideon proposes new leadership.
And who else?
Admiral Hux talks about Dr. Pershing.
And?
And says, hey, we're dead.
And Project Necromancer.
And Project Necromancer, yes, big deal.
So Necromancer, if you didn't know what Necromancer was, Project Necromancer is the assumed program to bring back Palpatine.
Papa Palpatine.
Which, if you look into the lore, the reason why his son, Hux, hates the idea of Palpatine and hates the Empire versus and why he creates the First Order is because he believes that Palpatine cannot come back and do what the First Order can do.
Mm-hmm.
So they create the First Order, and the other remnants go this way with Palpatine.
So there's a bit of a divide in terms of this divide. Power play.
And I think that's really interesting, too. So
we see a little bit of that during this meeting.
We do, because you have a lot of unnamed Imperial officers. Captain Pelion, Hux, and Gideon, they're the ones that are really named. You have a couple ones that are like, yeah, we've been raiding the trade routes, it's great, and Pelion's like, man, if you keep this up, the Republic's going to come down on us. Like, we have to pretend to be warlords, not to be an organized...
Yeah, we can't be a united front on this. No. Because if we do, well, they're just going to wipe us.
Yeah, then one guy's like, well, we have enough power, let's just take the fight to them. And Pelion's like, we got to wait for Thrawn. Like, he knows what he's doing. Thrawn is like the analytical mind of this that we need. And he's like, nah, it's not wait. So...
That's kind of a big lot of short foreshadowing about what's going on in the future.
I think so. In Ahsoka. I think we'll see it in Ahsoka.
I think Ahsoka is probably where we're going to see this. Yeah. The big thing that's happening in the here and now and what we talk about later on is that Moff Gideon is requesting for 3 Praetorian Guards.
Which is a big thing.
Very big. Interceptors and bombers.
Yeah. So he already has TIE Interceptors, but he wants more now.
Yes.
So we know the Interceptors that attacked Bo-Katan in episode 3 or 4.
It was definitely 3. And that was the big thing that we were asking at that time was, who owns these? And we found out it was Moff Gideon.
It was Moff Gideon. Which and it makes sense because her planet is one of the planets in the system with Mandalore. And they come from Mandalore. You'll see in the episode where they come from. So Moff Gideon has the TIE interceptors. He wants the TIE bombers. Doesn't really say why. And the Praetorian Guard, which you don't know what Praetorian Guards are, they're the red cloaked guards that guard the Emperor during episodes 1, 2, and 3, the red guys with like the little visor. And they evolve into the Praetorian Guards that then you fight. And I think we have a picture of the Praetorian Guards, actually, that fight for Snoke.
Yes.
So the Praetorian Guards for Snoke are pretty big.
If you didn't catch them in episodes 1, 2, and 3,
then
you definitely saw them in episode 8.
Yeah, which is really awesome. So the Praetorian Guards, apex machines, they're thought that they're force sensitive. They've always been guarding the Emperor. Yoda takes out a bunch of them, no problem.
So, I don't think so on that force-sensitive thing.
It depends. So, if one of the reasons why they're selected is kind of like... You'll see.
We'll talk about it later.
But that's about it. He says, okay. And then he mentioned, why do you want these guys? And he's like, well, the Mandalorians are back. Everyone's kind of like, well, that really sucks because we can't operate in the Outer Rim as freely if the Mandalorians are back.
No,
the Mandalorians are kind of like the boogeyman because they have such power and such a wide array of skill sets that the Empire cannot act as freely as they are currently with them there. So they're like, okay, you know what? Take the fighters, take the Praetorian Guard, take care of the Mandalorians. And then it's a whole long live the Emperor, or long live the Empire. Everyone's like, yep, long live the Empire, which is a big thing too. It's not long live the Emperor.
It's the Empire. Long live the Empire. The collective.
It very much feels like Gideon is trying to become the leader of the remnant of the Empire.
That's what it seems like. And even this entire situation where he's asking for these Praetorian Guards and the Interceptors, it sounds like a whole lot of boo-hicking. Because he only found out that the Mandalorians were a problem just before this meeting.
Yep.
So I'm thinking that he's looking to raise some defenses against Thrawn.
I think so. I think what we're going to see is, if we see Thrawn, probably not. I really hope, like, I want to see Thrawn, but I don't think we'll see him until Ahsoka, which is in August, which we can wait. But I think it's an internal struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on from that.
Yes.
We pan over to Nevarro. Beautiful shot of Nevarro. You get a shadow over Nevarro. The people in Nevarro are having flashbacks to the pirates.
Wah!
But no, it's an Imperial
light cruiser
with the Mandalorian symbol, the Mythosaur, underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really cool. So then Grief Karga's like, don't worry about it. They're friends. They're the Mandalorians. They're our guests. Everyone kind of doesn't panic. The stolen fleet arrives. Now, there's been a big difference with the stolen fleet. So the Mandalorian loyalists versus the Mandalorian covert, or the True Bloods versus the Foundlings, we'll call them, they don't get along well.
Definitely not.
So this is a whole uniting front, which is a first that's ever happened. Because Bo-Katan mentions later in the episode that division amongst the Mandalorians is what kills the Mandalorians.
Yes.
So Grief Karga shows up, and it's kind of like a throwaway scene almost. He brings a bottle of wine.
It kind of is. Yeah. Honestly, like, I'm glad that they showcased the general concern of the Nevarro people, but, like, realistically, we could have glazed over that, and it really wouldn't have mattered.
So Grief Karga brings a bottle of wine for Mando. He's like, drink this by yourself, because there's a lot of guests, and I don't have any glasses.
And it's also very expensive.
It is. Straight very from Coruscant. Nice. Straight from Coruscant.
Yes.
So then you have Grief Karga says, I got one more present for you. Let's go back to my office.
Come back to my office, Mando.
It's a little, okay, sure. And we see this, we see IG-12, or IG-11.
It's IG-11,
but he
renames it IG-12.
IG-12. So he marches it in, and Babu Frick is piloting IG-11. So where the chest used to be has now been hollowed out with little, like, robot controls, and it's all for Grogu to pilot it. So we have to see this moment where Grogu and Babu Frick kind of have a moment where they walk next to it. Babu Frick's like, no squeezy. And like, bat baby. And Grogu's kind of like, I could, but I'm interested in this new toy. Really fun moment. I think they're kind of milking Babu Frick, because how is he going to get from Nevarro to where he gets to in episode 9?
Episode 9? Yeah, I don't know.
So we're going to see. I like seeing Babu Frick, though. Don't get me wrong. It's a good character. They don't say much. The Incelans are really cool. It might not be Babu Frick. That's the thing. They never call him Babu. They just call him Incelans.
No, yeah. They're just Incelans, because that's the race of people. We don't know how long they live or whether this is Babu Frick or whatever. The only reason we know about Babu Frick in episode 9 is he introduces himself.
Exactly. So then we see this moment where Grief Karga is like, let's just put the kid in there. So he puts him in IG-12. And now Grogu's got a mech suit.
Yes.
The dream of anyone I know.
Yes.
Mech suit. Not to be Grogu, but pilot your own mech suit. Yes. And I think it's the first episode where Grogu didn't, like, backflip into it, which was great. I'm getting tired of the cutesy, I'm acrobatic kind of thing.
The flips are getting really annoying.
Yeah.
And it looks, I feel like the more they do it, the more, like,
the less genuine
it looks. Exactly. Yeah. The cheaper it looks, because it's just like, oh yeah, this is a doll, and we keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
So it's really annoying. But this also gives Grogu mobility options in the sense that he doesn't need to be in his little bobble. Yeah. He can actually walk and move around and do stuff. So this is really big and really cool. There's also a funny scene after that where they go through the market. And
he can say yes or no. I don't know why the Incelans wouldn't, like, give it more. I also like the fact that they just cut up the audio from IG-11 saying yes and no, and just used it now. So there's a button for no, button for yes. So Grogu can talk in a sense now too, where he can actually agree or disagree to things.
Simple communication.
Which is nice. We see, like, again, kind of a throwaway scene of them just walking through the market. It doesn't really add anything to it.
It's just fun. It's funny. Cute. That's about it.
It's cute. And they go back to the Stolen Fleet. They're roasting like a big chicken.
Pretty much.
I don't think there's enough meat on that for the X amount of Mandalorians that are there.
Which
now.
It seems like there's a large chunk of them. It seems like I would ballpark maybe 100, 200 combined.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think looking at the Stolen Fleet and then looking at what the Covert has, probably 200. Maybe
plus
even
the kids.
Maybe even more.
Yeah.
So we see this moment where Bo-Katan's like, guys, we got to start working together. We're having dinner together.
We are breaking bread.
And the armor plays a big role where she's like, we will have our guests for dinner. Cool.
She could have phrased it better.
Yeah. looks like meat's back on the menu. So we have this moment where Bo-Katan gives a rousing speech about going back to Mandalore. We just got a new home in Navarro, but hey, let's go back to our other planet. And everyone's like,
no, guys, this is our summer home. We come back here like only when it's not great. But
it feels very much like that. Like, what was the point of having, I understand why you need to have Navarro as a place to gather them, but it didn't feel very good in the sense that, like, you show up and everyone's like, all right, well, peace out. We're going to another place.
Go on someplace new.
Forget yeah, that. So they all decide to go. Well, not even. So Bo-Katan says, who will go with me?
Yeah, so she asks for volunteers. And the yeah. obvious, the usual suspects, they raise their hands. Yeah, so Din Djarin, and he nominates Grogu as well.
Grogu doesn't get a chance to say no or yes because he's not in the suit.
Exactly. Paz Vizsla.
Yep.
Axe Woves.
Yep.
And then other Walmart girl.
Walmart? Or no, it's Toys R Us.
Toys R Us,
clearance pop figure Mandalorian girl. Feel bad not knowing her name. And then a bunch of other characters we don't know. It's about an even number between the Loyalists and the Covert,
yes.
Which is nice. You want a nice even number. There's some characters they kind of pause on facial wise. I don't know who they are. I don't think they play a pivotal role.
I don't know if they do or do not. But yeah. I wanted to touch on this thing that's really interesting.
Yep.
Is when you look at the Covert and you look at the Loyalists.
Yep.
Together, all of the armor for the Loyalists looks exactly the same.
It, yeah.
It almost feels like United Front, but yeah. when you think about it, they can take their helmets off, so they can have that individualism with their faces.
Yeah.
Whereas the Covert can't. Nope. They don't. So they need to be able to recognize each other
yep.
and be able to see their individuality. So the fact that they all look different is really nice touch. And overall, just very cool.
I think so, right? Like, it's like, how when everyone looks the same, how do you differentiate?
Exactly.
And I think it's really cool they can dye their armor. That's why I think they get along well. Tensions are a little high, but we go along. The armorer says, I'll go with you guys. We're going to have a great time. So we still have a bit of a bad sense about the armorer, but I don't believe she's an Imperial spy.
I don't know, man. There's something about her, and there's a certain way that they're framing up shots and the certain way that they're doing things that it makes it seem like there's a hidden agenda with the armorer.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, she really believes Bo-Katan with the Mythosaur.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I'm really skeptical that we're going to see next episode. So this is the other thing, too. There's a lot that's got to happen in the next episode in order to confirm everything.
Yeah.
So we'll move on. We'll talk about that at the end.
Yeah, so we go to Mandalore. The entire fleet takes off. Boom. Goes to Mandalore. While they're in Mandalore, they get a strike team together. It's just the Gauntlet, which is the name of Bo-Katan's ship.
Mm-hmm.
She takes the Gauntlet down. About equal party members. Probably 14, 15, 16.
About that. That's yeah. a good number.
And they have this beautiful shot of them kind of breaking through the atmosphere and looking down at Mandalore. She opens the bay doors. Paz Vizsla says, this is worse than I thought. And Axe Wolf makes a comment where he's like, I was here when it happened. Because again, the Covert wasn't there. They were already in hiding while Mandalore was being destroyed.
Yeah, so that's right.
It's kind of a moment where Paz Vizsla is kind of like, oh man, that sucks. Like I.
Yeah, there's that moment of empathy of oh wow, you were here when this happened and then it looks like this now. I can't imagine what it was like while this was happening.
Yeah, and then like Din Djarin's also watching it happen and he comes back into the cockpit, he's like, I think they're ready. They drop down, check out the area. You get a moment where Axe Wolves and Paz Vizsla look at each other, kind of nod. Axe is like, yep, Commander, or I think it's his Commandant, you can land. Great. They land. It's Din, Grogu, Bo-Katan, and the armor get off the ship. They start their adventure. They kind of just pick a direction. And they're like,
pretty much.
Find the forge
they don't
somewhere.
Really have any real heading to go in, so yeah. They just kind of pick one.
Bo-Katan mentions that they're currently on top of where the capital city would have been. So they land, the capital city's below us, we'll go that way because it has to, the Forge is in the capital city. They start to go on their adventure and they see some dust clouds. You have this moment where she's like, "Okay, hey guys, get ready." She mentions that the Night Owls, which is Axe Wolves and the other collected loyalists, they're always like, "Yep, they're the Night Owls," which is what Bo-Katan is. Night Owls kind of go together. This weird little pirate ship flies up, or rides up, I guess.
Yep.
And you see a moment where, like, they're clearly Mandalorians. You can see their helmets. They're clearly Mandalorians. Like, "Do you have food? We're really hungry." And Bo-Katan's like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Is that Lady Bo-Katan?" Or they said, "Are you a night? Is that the Crest of the Night Owl?" And she says, "I hope so." And then they're like, "Is that Lady Bo-Katan Kryze?" And the armor is like, "They're Mandalorians."
Gasp.
And then they jet up. And you have a commander of the remnant Mandalorian forces. Basically, they tell the story of how when it was carpet bombing, the Imperial shot down every ship. They carpet bombed the planet twice over. And the only reason why they survived the way they did was by moving ahead of the bombing and then circling back around.
Yeah, exactly.
So they've been surviving on Mandalore for X amount of years. Not crazy long. I think Mandalore, because Bo-Katan, again, she was there for the bombing.
That's the thing. If Bo-Katan was there and so was Axe Wolves, yep, it couldn't have been that long
ago. Yeah, I'm going to say like max 10 years.
I'd say so. That's a good number.
So they talk about the Night of a Thousand Tears, where the forces of the Mandalorians are kind of beat back into a corner. And you have this moment where Bo-Katan's talking to the remnant forces. They're like, "Hey, you know, we know where the Great Forge is. We're here for you. We're still loyalists." And they're like, "We tried our best." And she's like, "Well, I'm sorry, guys, but I surrendered." And it's a moment where she's like, the ISB, which is what Moff Gideon, he's the head of the ISB, which is the Imperial Bureau or Imperial something security. They basically are like the secret police.
Gotcha.
So the ISB reached out to me and said, "Surrender all your forces and we won't kill all of you." And she's like, "I didn't trust Moff Gideon, but it was a shot. I wanted to save the people that were left." And she goes to Moff Gideon, she gives him the Darksaber, and she says, "You know what? We surrender." And then Gideon betrays her, of course.
As bad guys do.
Yep. The loyalists escape, barely, and Mandalore is glassed. The Mandalorians mentioned something. The remnant Mandalorians that live on Mandalore ask the Covert, "How do they survive?" And the Covert's like, and the armor says, we left Mandalore long ago. We've been living in hiding." And they're like, "Oh, so you must be Death Watch." Because Death Watch is like really the only Mandalorians that act outside of the Mandalorian culture. And she's like, "Well, technically no, Death Watch is dead. Like, Death Watch has fallen apart."
I think this is her first mention of Death Watch.
It is. And like, this helmet that I wear is supposed to be from the comics that is when Boba Fett was, or not Boba Fett, when Jango Fett was part of Death Watch. So it kind of ties in that Death Watch, it shows that these Mandalorians kind of came from outside of Death Watch. And Death Watch let in people who weren't technically True Blood Mandalorians. So she says, "Nope, Death Watch has been scattered. All the other clans outside of the main Mandalorian system have been scattered. They've all become just coverts." And it's really interesting to see that, like, the dissension between the Mandalorians, they don't exist anymore outside of Mandalore. The Mandalorians, they're like a boogeyman. Right? Like, everyone, again, people called Din Djarin the Mandalorian because he was the only one they knew.
It's true. It seems like they are scarce, and it's very rare to run into one. So the fact that we have so many of them just here,
it's impressive. So then you have this moment where she's like, "We're going to the Great Forge. We got to find it." And they're like, "Well, we can do you better. We know where the Great Forge is.
Hey, guess what? We found it forever ago."
And you have this moment where, like, Paz Vizsla and Axe Wolves fight. Grogu hops in. It's over like a checkers game. Grogu hops in. He's like, "No fighting, please."
It's definitely more than just a checkers game.
Brothers, please. Brothers, we are countrymen in this.
And that's the thing, is what's important is that Din Djarin wanted to jump in, and so did Bo. But she was like, "Well, none of us really can, because if we do, then it's just going to be an all-out war on this ship."
But Grogu is that third party.
Yes, which was perfect. Excellent choice.
Which was nice. So you have this moment where Grogu steps in and says, "Break up the fighting, guys. Come on, enough is enough." And
all he says is no. But yes, you get so much out of that.
Yeah, that no means a lot. Then you have the remnant Mandalorian forces. A lot of them are beat up. A lot of them are hurt. The armorer says, "You know what? They can't fight. Like, I'll go back to the gauntlet with them and take them back to the fleet. That way they can be safe." And this kind of, this in a sense makes, it's interesting because why, like, of all the people to send back, the armor is the only one who can't really, she doesn't have a gun, she's not combat efficient, she doesn't have a jetpack.
No, it's true. So she's the most logical choice to be sent back.
Yeah.
And this, once again, this gets a little more interesting.
I know.
It's just another thing in the pot.
You know? I know, and she's taking the wounded. Like, how can the wounded fight back?
I know. It's hard to say, but we'll double back to that.
We have this moment where the gauntlet takes off with the wounded. They set forth for the forge. And it's like you see them going towards the forge. She's going towards the planet, or towards the fleet. You see, and again, if you didn't watch Clone Wars, you don't know what this is. If you didn't watch Bad Batch, you don't know what it is. A creature emerges from the rubble. And the way it looks to me looks a lot like a Zillow Beast. Now, Zillow Beast, if you didn't watch Clone Wars and you didn't watch Bad Batch, are these creatures from a planet that are basically resistant to all lightsaber and blasters.
Wow.
They feed on electricity and energy, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger and evolve to the point where they're these towering monsters that cannot be hurt. The Zillow Beast is captured in Clone Wars, and Palpatine wants to use its pelt for armor for his Praetorian Guard and eventually the Stormtroopers. Doesn't work out, though, because the Zillow Beast, it's not really clonable. They kill it in the end because it's rampaging through Coruscant. It's really a sad moment where the Zillow Beast, like, you can see the pain in its eyes. The Jedi are like, we can't do this, and Palpatine's like, shoot it down. Then in Bad Batch, they encounter a fledgling cloned Zillow Beast from the Imperials. This is, of course, Bad Batch takes place between episode 3 and 4. So you see a clone Zillow Beast that they end up, the Imperials capture it. So maybe the Zillow Beast's around. Maybe they have some. It could be a Zillow Beast. Maybe that's how they took down the Mandalorians. Releasing a Zillow Beast onto a planet where everyone shoots at it. Really good way to stop them.
Nope, for
sure. An unkillable creature. So it looked like a Zillow Beast. Then it kind of hides away again. I think maybe it was. I really kind of hope it is. I'd love to see a Mythosaur Zillow Beast fight.
That would be interesting.
Let them fight. So that's my little aside. It may or may not be. I don't know.
Either way, it destroys their pirate ship.
Yeah.
And everyone is forced to abandon ship, which I'm glad you gave that little insert about the Zillow Beast, because I was just thinking, obviously, I was just like, why don't I just fight it?
Exactly. And you can't. That's the thing, right? Like it. And it doesn't stick around for a fight either.
No, definitely like, not. They all so it run. Doesn't pursue them, and it doesn't really dig up them and go looking for them. So
no, a couple Mandalorians, I think, die.
Yeah, a lot it of seems
them,
to look
some
that
of them
way.
Get crushed in the ship being destroyed. But then they're like, okay, we can go on foot. So they walk on foot to the Great Forge. You get into this cave system, and you hear jetpacks. And we at home all know it's Super Commandos. I inferred that it was going to be Super Commandos. You might not know, but again.
Yes, we all at home knew it was 100%.
Super Commandos. Don't worry. Yep, everyone knew. And the Super Commandos fly in and start blasting.
So
they start fighting. It's a very cool fight scene. Of the remnant Mandalorian forces, all of them die except for maybe two.
I would say so.
Which is the commander. The old guy with the broken helmet and the shawl gets shot and falls off. Because they don't... I think he's done.
The commander think any of them have Beskar.
Looks like he survived.
No.
Because he's the one with the scratch on his helmet. He looks like he survives. A couple of the Mandalorians survive. They fight back the forces. Paz Vizsla just starts gunning them down. Paz is an absolute monster in this episode. Bo-Katan's like, come on, boys, let's get them. And they chase them. And as we talked, Dan and I talked about this, we talked about it. It was probably one of the dumbest things Bo-Katan has done.
Terrible plan.
We're going to call it Bloodlust. They were seeing red. They wanted to go for the kill. So they chase the forces, and the tunnel changes from a tunnel to an Imperial base.
Uh-huh.
And you see it. You see the lighting. You see the doors, the blast doors.
Just the way that the entire thing is shaped, it looks Imperial.
It looks like a base. And you get to the point where they're almost to the spot where the episode ends. Something happens. Axe Wolves like, we gotta warn the fleet. Imperials are here. So he shoots up through a little like pocket in the ceiling. He's like, I got juice in the backpack. I can get up high enough. I want Axe Wolves to be a good guy. I really do want Axe Wolves to be good.
You're implying that he's not.
Either the armor betrays them or he does.
Axe Wolves does? Oh man, I didn't even think about that. Okay, we're almost done the episode.
I feel like it's not gonna be Axe Wolf. I feel like it's not gonna be either one, actually. I think
we'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah. So they get into this blast door. Blast door closes behind them. Blast door closes in front of them. With Din Djarin getting behind. So Din gets through the blast doors, and then the doors close, and they're basically like super glass.
Gideon, basically laser-proof glass.
Laser-proof. So the Super Commandos fly down. They have this moment where, like, Din Djarin's fighting. He's got his flamethrower. He's but they're tying his arms together. He's shooting them. He burns a couple of them.
I think we have a picture of that too
of Din like firing it. Really cool scene.
Yes.
They finally subdue Din Djarin. And Gideon's like, so Moff Gideon arrives in this amazing armor. He mentions that the Mandalorians, the Jedi, something else.
The cloners.
The cloners all bring something to the table. And I'm doing that all.
Which and is also like, just completely reinforces that these super commandos, they're all clones.
They've got to be clones. He even like taps his armor and he's like, this is pure Beskar. Made from the remnants of Mandalore. And then he puts on this wicked helmet. I take the mic. So the helmet looks, Dan and I talked about this, the helmet looks a bit like the helmets worn by the Mandalorians when Darth Maul's in control. I don't know if it's true or not.
It's hard to say.
His only has, so his has 3 points. Two here and one in the front. Well, Darth Maul's had the actual crown.
If we know the timeline of this, Darth Maul shouldn't be alive.
He's dead. Darth Maul is dead.
Yeah, so...
Darth Maul dies in between episode 3 and 4.
Exactly.
Like, for good dies. Like,
yes, absolutely. Not,
Obi-Wan kills him.
Not the fake die where he died in episode 1.
So, I think it's a really cool callback, and I think it could be two things. Either Gideon's paying homage to the first person to bring Mandalore to heal, which was Darth Maul. Darth Maul showed up to Mandalore and just took over the entire place. Or it could just be a style choice. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to be king.
Yeah.
Could be that. Because it's all around. So maybe it's...
Well, his... No, his is only 3 points.
Is so it? Is I thought it was here. All around.
No, so Darth Maul's has the Dathomir male head crown.
Oh, interesting. Him. Okay. Either way, it could just be there to show that he is the leader.
Yeah, if you want to look up Gar Saxon, if you look at this Wikipedia, Gar Saxon shows the helmet really well.
Okay.
Then Gideon's like, take him away. And he's like, all right.
Get him out of my sight.
Yeah, he's like, okay, surrender. And I might not kill you, but I'm going to blow your fleet up. And Bo-Katan's like, nope. So then the Mandalorians have this moment where, like, they know they can't shoot through the blast wall, but they start blasting the blast wall to create a distraction. Bo-Katan starts using the Darksaber to cut a hole out. Classic Jedi, cut a hole through something to get out. And it's this really powerful scene where Gideon's like, all right, open the blast doors, shoot them. And... really stupid move on Gideon.
I would say so. If anything, it just showcases how overconfident he is.
He really is, which means, again, I don't think Gideon's done this season.
I think he's got to be.
I think what's going to happen is Din Djarin's going to get out somehow, because remember, Pazma said he should be dead. Like he deserves death. And I think Din Djarin's going to escape somehow and avenge Paz Vizsla, because as we see, they open the blast doors, Paz Vizsla starts blasting with his crazy gun, and it's a really powerful scene where the Mandalorians are fighting. Paz is shooting down super commandos. They all get out but Paz.
Yeah.
First and foremost, the whole Bo-Katan cut wouldn't fit Paz Vizsla anyways.
It's not big definitely enough. Not. He's a big guy.
And she's like, no, like, come with us. Like, we're done. Like, get out of here. And he's like, no.
There's too many of them.
And he smashes the door, and the door closes on him. And she's like, no, don't. And he has this moment where he's shooting all these these super commandos. His gun overheats.
Yeah.
And he throws it away. And just starts, like, fist fighting them. He throws some off the cliff. Not a good time to be a super commando, if you ask me.
There's a moment where I was like, man, he's just going to win straight up.
Yeah.
And everything's going to be all hunky-dory.
And then...
walk out.
We see the Praetorian Guard.
Oh, man.
And the Praetorian Guard, again, are just absolute monsters. They use... energy weapons that are not unlike lightsabers, but more like the droid Magna Guard staffs that General Grievous' people use.
Traitor!
Exactly.
Yes.
Like that kind of thing. Something that so they take on Paz Vizsla. He pulls out his vibro blade. He has his shield. He puts up a good fight.
He does. He does a great job against.
But it's a 3-1. It's a 3-1 fight, and he gets stabbed. And he's not wearing even true Beskar.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not wearing true Beskar. So that Durasteel Beskar hybrid does not put up a good fight against these crazy energy weapons. And they kill him. He makes this really gross gurgling sound when they stab him in the neck, and then he just slumps over dead.
Poor Ragnar.
And that's it.
That is it, yeah. We end off pretty much right there with the episode.
He hits the ground and the episode's done.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, it's a wild episode. Like, there's a lot to talk about.
It's probably the best episode, but we have lots of predictions for the season finale tomorrow.
Yep.
So, the big topic of debate is, who is the spy? We put up a pretty good argument for the armorer, but then you brought up ex-wolves. And oh no, that makes a lot of sense.
See, the way I see it, though, is... ex-wolves could have just shot Bo-Katan.
He totally could have, yeah.
And that's why I don't think it's Mandalorians. I could eat my words tomorrow. It could be the armor. It could be Axe Wolves. But the way I see the spies, because it's titled The Spies, I think it's a spy inside of Gideon's own.
Perhaps.
I think it's spies in the sense of spies for the Empire, spies for the Mandalorians.
Who knows? Maybe one of these Mandalorians isn't even a Mandalorian. They're just, they got the armor, they put it on, and they've just been playing the part.
They showed this one kid's face.
It's true, they did.
When he goes, I will go. And they kind of focus him pretty long. I don't know if it's going to be that. Again, I really don't want it to be the Mandalorians. I want, because Bo-Katan gives this rousing speech where the Mandalorians, what destroys them are themselves.
Yep.
But Axe Wolves and Paz Vissa fight, and it's kind of like the bad blood's gone now. They've had their fisticuffs. They feel good. Paz Vissa sacrifices himself to save them. Paz Vissa and Axe Wolves talks before Axe Wolves jets up.
But that's the thing. I can't get Axe Wolves jetting up out of my head and the fact that he avoided all of that. Yeah. He didn't get caught. He didn't do anything. And there's no communication between the surface and the fleet. How is he going to communicate with them?
But the big thing is there is communication between the party. Bo-Katan can talk to Axe Wolves.
No, for sure.
So Axe Wolves knows what's going on. And Axe Wolves, his whole thing was he was going to jet up and try to get as high up as possible.
Yeah.
To tell the fleet, get ready.
I don't know if that's going to work, though.
I don't think so. But I don't think the fleet is going to get caught unaware. I don't think these TIE bombers are going to fly up and just destroy the fleet.
No, I don't think so either. Like, the light cruiser is pretty massive. Yeah. So there's two things that could go with the armorer being with the fleet.
Yep.
Either she is the traitor.
Yep.
And she just says, you know what, peace, I'm out, see you later.
Yep.
Or they wanted a dramatic character on the fleet for when the attack happens so they can cut back to that and we can see what's happening.
I think that's what we're looking at here. I think also, so a couple predictions, okay? We're probably not going to see Boba Fett.
Probably not.
But Boba Fett coming in clutch could be a possibility.
That could be really cool. It'd be really interesting to see the Slave One come in and just save the fleet.
Yeah, I think that'd be really cool. I think maybe more Mandalorians showing up.
That would also be really cool.
This Mandalorian fleet rides up. The remnants show up. They take down the Empire.
We're right beside the moon, and apparently they've hit out on the moon. So.
Yeah. We also have Thrawn could come in.
I think Thrawn needs to come in.
I think Thrawn coming in and being like clean slate. You know what? Mandalorians, you guys do your own thing. I'm going to bring the Empire to the main hub. You guys take care of the Outer Rim. I don't care. The Mandalorians protect the main hub by stopping people from coming in.
Yep.
You're cool. Gideon's a problem. He's a threat.
So, my theory is the Mandalorians win somehow.
Yeah, of course.
Gideon gets away, and then he gets caught up by Thrawn. And Thrawn says, hey, I heard you've been doing some not-so-great stuff.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, execute him, and then he dies.
Yeah.
I think that would be an excellent tease and intro to Thrawn for Ahsoka.
I think it'd be great, which I really hope. Either way, this is not the end of the Mandalorians. Even the whole thing between Pedro Pascal and Disney, how he kind of wants out.
I think
he will still be a character, but a background character.
I think so, too.
He had this moment where he told Bo-Katan, like, your song's not over. Like, I am here to support you now.
That was another really big moment, and that kind of highlights, one, Din Djarin being Din Djarin, but also that maybe he's on his way out, and Bo-Katan's now going to be the big focus.
Which I wouldn't mind. I think Katie Sackhoff does a great job as playing Bo-Katan.
She does a great job, and as far as I know, she enjoys it. She thinks it's great.
Her dad is a huge Star Wars fan, and she brought him on set to meet Mark Hamill when he was like doing the body double thing for Luke.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be fantastic. That's my predictions.
Those are my predictions as well. We're going to have to see what happens tomorrow for the season finale.
I actually can't wait.
No, I'm actually very excited. I wasn't as excited, and then we started really talking about it, and I'm like,
I think it'll be wild. So Paz Vissla's dead. The Mandalorians are on the run. The Praetorians are still around. Moff Gideon has captured Din Djarin and has told the TIE interceptors and TIE bombers to go up with the fleet and destroy them. That is where we left off the episode. Again, the sky's limits with this. I'm looking like I'm probably going to be close to an hour episode.
What would disappoint?
A short episode.
A short episode, I agree.
Having Gideon destroy the fleet and Bo-Katan start again. Like, that's what's the point?
No,
If season four, which is supposedly the last episode, last season four, what's the point of having them just restart?
Yes, exactly.
Like, that's not going to tie up anything. It's going to make things messy. Gideon getting beaten. also, there's a big thing where currently the New Republic thinks the Mandalorians captured Gideon.
That's true as well.
So the New Republic might bring in fighters to fight the Mandalorians and then be like, oh my god, those TIE fighters, I knew. And then Captain Tate will be like, I knew you were here. And then maybe they'll fight Gideon as well. The Mandalorians will kind of be wiped clean and be like, you know what, Mandalorians, you guys didn't do anything wrong. Do your thing. You anti-heroes, you live your lives. So I think with that, that kind of wraps up the episode, the synopsis, what it's all about. So check out episode tomorrow, episode 24, I guess.
Yeah, last episode of the season.
I have high hopes.
I also have high hopes. I really want it to do really well. Honestly, I think this entire season has just been very good.
It's been great. Like, but there's been one weak episode.
I agree.
So this has been the Mandalorian Review, only on riotradio.ca at the DCSA Media Hub. My name is Eldon Atkin.
I'm Evan Halbert.
And we will check you out next time. I guess you can check us out next time. Right here. And this is the way.
This is the way.